Avos per Gimel, Mishnah Chaf Aleph is 321, and in some Mishnahs it's 317. We have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Elazar ben Azariah is famous from the story that when it happened that when they were setting up the in the early years of Yavne after the Chorban Bayis Sheni, so the Nasi was, the second Nasi after Yochanan ben Zakkai, was Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, and he gave the Gadol Dor of Yeshua a hard time a number of times until essentially was a mutiny. They replaced him with somebody else. That somebody else who was at least temporarily the Nasi was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the author of our Mishnah here. Elazar ben Azariah was, he famously says, it's quoted in the Haggadah and other places, the first parak of Brachos, that he says, Hare ani keben shivim shana, I'm like a man of 70 years old, says the Bavli, he was actually 18 years old, but he sort of miraculously went gray overnight to be ra'ui, appropriate to lead the Jewish people as the Nasi, based on an objection his wife had. In fact, the Yerushalmi says he was 16 at the time. What it means that the Rambam says that it was not necessarily miraculous, but the tremendous burdens of responsibility ages a person quickly. The Arizal says he's a Gilgal, a reincarnation of Shmuel HaNavi, lived to 52, so 52 plus 18 gives you to 70. Whatever the Pshat is, this Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a special person, certainly. And one thing I want to point out, because I'll come back to it later on in my explanation, is it says that while Rabbi Gamliel was strict regarding who he let into the yeshiva at Yavne, you had to be tocho kabaro. Your insides had to be like your outsides, meaning you had to be like already refined through and through to be allowed to participate in the discussions in the Beis HaMidrash. But as opposed to a sort of elitist approach, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took a sort of populist approach. He said democratically, whoever wants to come in can come in. He let everyone come in. There was a tremendous demand. You know, they had to bring in hundreds of benches that day and so on. And that's sort of the story of Maseches Edios, where they collect the discussion that happened in what's called Bo Bayom on that period of time when they opened the Beis HaMidrash to everybody. In any case, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has a number of things to say. The first thing he says here in our Mishnah is he has pairs of things which are sort of one depends on the other or is mashlim, completes the other. So I'll read you them right now and then we'll go one at a time through each one. He says, Im ein Torah ein derech eretz. If there's no Torah, there's no derech eretz, whatever that translates to be. Vim ein derech eretz, ein Torah. Without derech eretz, there's no Torah. Similarly, he says, Im ein chochma ein yira. Without wisdom, there's no fear of sin. Im ein yira ein chachma, without fear of sin, there's no wisdom. Im ein bina ein da'as, without this bina is sort of procedural understanding. There's no da'as, intuitive understanding. I'll explain that in a little bit. Vim ein da'as, if you haven't got da'as, the sort of intuitive understanding. Ein bina, you won't have this procedural understanding either. Again, I'll explain that in a moment. Be'ez Hashem. Im ein kemach ein Torah, if there's no flower, there'll be no Torah. Vim ein Torah ein kemach, if there's no Torah, there'll be no flower. That's what the Mishnah says sort of in translation. Now, just before I begin, there's sort of an obvious logical question, which is if each one of these two couplets, each pair, each item depends on the other, the question would become, well, which comes first? How could you have one? How could anyone begin because you need the other one? So that, of course, sounds interesting in theory and practice. It's not how it works. And the basic answer that would be that our Mishnah is saying that each one won't endure without the other one, or each one isn't fully complete without the other one. But of course, you could get some without the other. And as we'll see, in certain of these, it's understood that really one should precede the other, and that sort of is an order of events, which one comes first, which comes second. Okay, so the first of these pairs is Im ein Torah ein derech eretz, Im ein derech eretz ein Torah. So what is derech eretz? There are a number of pshatim. I think the baseline primary pshat should be that Derech Eretz refers to, which literally means like the way of the land, refers to socialization, okay? Meaning how to deal with society. And that really has sort of a lower level and a higher level issue. The lower level issue of socialization basically boils down to just having manners, okay? Is it appropriate to push in front of the line, to yell when you're not happy, to have a tantrum, to take what isn't, not to steal, but to take what isn't yours necessarily, and to not say please and thank you, all these kinds of things is just proper socialization. But that's manners. There's also like a higher level, which we can translate as ethics, which is, again, not necessarily a moral failing right and wrong, but there's certain norms by which society operates. They are conventional. Society could choose to have it this way or that way, but if your society does it this way, then you better not do it that way because it's inappropriate. It's like unethical. It's a violation of what is expected of you, and people are, when they're, whatever rules they're playing by, they're anticipating you're playing by the same rules, those same ethical rules. So by breaking those rules, you are in violation of the social norms. The basic assumption is when you have a, in halacha, if you have a contract, if you don't specify what the, specify to the contrary, so then the halacha is that the contract is interpreted to be based on what's societally normal. Let me just speak this out for a second. I think people are not always clear on the difference between ethics and morality. They're not the same thing. And I'm saying here that the ethics are like a convention. They're man-made. In other words, as opposed to morality, which is, we could say, like an absolute right or wrong the Torah is governing. So we're differentiating because we're saying the morality, what's right and wrong, is coming from the Torah. But ethics is a little more, you know, it's a little more subjective, but it's conventional. In other words, the lower level would be, say, like, you know, polite. Is it polite to eat a hamburger with your hands? Or chicken wings with your fingers, or do you have to use a knife and fork? Okay, there's no objective right or wrong here, but if you live in a place where people don't use their hands, then you shouldn't be using your hands. That's manners, okay? Kind of similarly, is it appropriate that when everyone's getting on a bus, is it just sort of, you know, every man for himself to get on the bus, or should people, you know, defer to the person in front of them and walk in an orderly way? It's definitely more polite and more convenient people walk in an orderly way, but if that's how it works in society where you are, so then it's not, everyone has to look out for himself. If you operate like that, you'll never get on the bus. So those are kind of ethical issues and the socialization issues. Now, our mission here is saying that if you haven't got proper socialization, good manners, and attention to ethics, you won't have Torah, and vice versa, without Torah, you won't have ethics. The idea here is that we want the Torah to inform the notion of Jewish society's ethics and manners. And similarly, we want the people who are the repositories of the Torah to be people who live up to the expected standards of manners and ethics. So you certainly can't have a society where the Talmid Chacham, who are supposed to be the, you know, the people who are the source of our wisdom and what's right and wrong, to be people who are perceived as being unmannered, impolite, because that's a chil Hashem, people are just not interested in them anymore, or certainly unethical. So that's one thing. You can't have Torah if the people are not going to be mannerly and ethical. But similarly, the Jewish society, what should define its proper derech eretz, its manners and its ethics, should be informed by the Torah. Okay? You can't really have proper derech eretz in the Torah society without people who understand the Torah's values of what's right and wrong. So that's the first couplet, if you will. Okay? The second pair is Imen Chachma in Yira. This actually is old news. We had this back in what would be, let's call it Mishnah 3:11 of this Mishnah. That's the counting we have. Chanina Mendoza said that you need to have that Chochmah can't be mitkayam without Yira. So we discussed already, the idea is that if you learn but don't take your learning seriously because you're not concerned about the ramifications of learning badly and upholding the Ratzon Hashem and contravening, you know, the halacha, so then your Chochmah won't stick with you, so it won't stick around. But similarly, if you don't know the halachas, let's call them, you won't know what to be afraid of contravening. So you need to know the halacha, and then you'll have proper yira of, you know, being careful not to violate Hilchos Shabbos and the like. You can't just guess. So those two things go hand in hand, like we discussed already back before in Mishnah 3:11. Then the Mishnah says, "Im ein bina ein daas vim daas ein bina." So a few pshatim here on what bina and daas are. Here I'm going to try to give you sort of a generalized explanation that'll carry you through the tefillah and the like, not just in this Mishnah, although the other pshatim will have a different take in this Mishnah. So you have to differentiate between chachma of the previous couplet and then bina and das. So chachma essentially means raw information, the facts, okay, the halachas, the rules. Bina is the application of those rules. If you put two and two together, what comes out of it? So that's your mevin davar metoch davar, the application. And das has to do with sort of an intuitive understanding of something, intimate, intuitive, integrated understanding within one's, you know, worldview. So essentially what that means is that chachma basically answers the question of what, And Bina answered the question essentially of how, and Das essentially answered the question of why. Okay, to oversimplify. So just to, let me give an example, because this is abstract, and if you're not familiar, you're not familiar. So maybe I'll give two examples. The first metaphor I'll give you is, if you ever recall back to math class or physics class, you know, there were all these formulas you had to memorize to do the calculations. So just knowing the formulas, that'll be chokhmah. Okay, you just have to know there's a bunch of formulas, you have to memorize them, just those are the raw facts. But then there are always the people who didn't really understand what was going on in physics class. They just said, you know, just tell me which formula to use, and then I'll use it, I'll plug it in. So the ability to plug it in is bina. Bina is like from Russian bonet, build. Okay, you're building up something. So you take, okay, I get it. Here's the equation, and I can just plug in the numbers, and I'll get out information from it. That's what bina is, building it up. And a person who lacks bina doesn't know which of the formulas to use. He's just not sure, right? He's not clear, because he doesn't understand it. But then there's das. Das is sort of an intuitive understanding. So that often, the way that would come on this metaphor would be, you run the calculations and you get an answer. So someone who really has an intuitive understanding of what these things we're talking about are, so then he'll look at the answer and say, that can't be right, because like, it just doesn't make sense, okay, without seeing the details, because he has a holistic idea of it. Okay, that's Chacham Bina Das. I'll give you just the same kind of example in a different metaphor, so make it clear a different way if you're not familiar with, you know, physics equations. If a person is doing a puzzle, okay, so you're doing a puzzle. So the pieces of the puzzle need to be there. That's chokhmah, just the raw pieces. You need to have the details, right, the facts. But then they fit together in a certain way to build something up. That's bina, how the puzzle comes together, knowing the rules for how to do a puzzle. It's procedural, right? Bina is like procedural understanding. So you say, oh, you first look for the corner pieces and the frame piece, you put it together, and you build the inside, look until they match up. Das is like, I know what the puzzle is meant to look like, and I can just, without following any of those rules, I know this is how it should come together because I recognize the picture. And if you, even if you've got all the pieces, and if I recognize if a piece was missing, and if you follow the rules and did exactly what you're supposed to, and it all interlocks snug, but the picture's, I look at the picture, it's not right. That's not how it should look. I have an intuitive understanding. I know how it is. So das, like the Eitz HaDas was when Adam and Chava internalized Tov V'ra inside of them. It wasn't something external to them. It's within their head. Or maybe a better example would be when it talks about Adam and Chava being intimate and getting intimate knowledge of each other, that's referred to as das, right? They know each other not on sort of a cerebral, procedural way, but in a more intuitive, integrated way. Okay, so that's Chacham Bina Das. So here in the context of our Mishnah here, it means Bina and Das. Usually Bina comes first procedurally, and just you have to know like the rules of how something goes. And if you do enough of these, you know, math problems, I'll use a third example, just a different one. Playing chess, okay? So there's like rules. You have to know which rules, the chess, where each piece goes, is out of the board, and how the pieces move. That's the rules of chess. That's the chokhmah, okay? Now, you can apply that. You can start playing chess games that you get good in it. You understand what's a good move, what's a bad move. That's bina. You understand how to apply those rules appropriately, okay? Now, if someone is really good at chess and has been playing for years and years, he can take one look at the board and A, like know what's going on, and B, he'd say like, oh, that was a bad move. How could he know it's a bad move? He has an intuitive understanding. He's seen this so many times, even without, you know, running out the full calculations of all what's going on the board, he can see that I know good boards and I see them, I know good moves and I see them, and that wasn't one of them. He has an intuitive understanding because he's done it a lot of times. So normally, Bina comes first. Bina is procedural, understanding how to apply the rules and go build something up. In the context of halacha, that would be not just like knowing the halachas, but how to, you know, in a halachas, a kashrus shiloh, okay? The chachmah is you got to know the rules in Shulchan Aruch, you know, you got to know the rules of nos and tam, and how does taste transfer, and the rules of suffix, and the rules of rov, and the rules of you know, whatever, all the technicalities of you know, the facts that go into making, deciding on what to do for a kashrus problem. So when someone asks you a question, oh, my meaty spoon was in my, you know, my cream of mushroom soup that has milk inside, what's kosher, what's not kosher? So you know what even the facts are, you know, you have to guess the facts. What was the soup? What was the spoon? Was it a ben yomo? How big are these things and so on? Those are the facts. Then bina is like, well, knowing how to apply them. Sometimes not relevant, or to know which rules apply when, which, you know, that's understanding how to apply those rules. That's bina. Das would be intuitive, right? So you've answered 1001 kasher shalas. A guy tells you, you know, I use a clean spoon to stir my, you know, a clean spoon that's not a ben yomo. to stir my soup. You're like, it's fine. You just know all, you know, it's fine without thinking about it because you've seen this so many times. You know, l'chachil, you can't do it. But you have it after the fact, it's fine because you just, without even thinking it through, you know it because you've seen it so many times intuitively. So bina is supposed to come first, learning how to apply the rules, and after enough time, you'll get an intuitive understanding that is the das. But our mission here is saying that if you haven't got bina, don't understand how the rules work, you certainly can't go with just on your hunch for Allah and go with das, no way. You can't have any legitimate das without having the process of bina, doing enough of the physics problems or doing enough puzzles or doing enough, you know, working through enough, you know, Kasher Shilohs, whatever the story is. But, so you can't have das. But also, just as you can't have das without bina, you can't have bina without das. In other words, if you really understand something, you have to have sort of an intuitive understanding of it. You have to sort of have a feel for these things. If you don't really have a feel for it, as the way the Bartender says, you can't like explain the reason why something is that way. So then you don't really have a good grasp of even the procedure either. You're just kind of like a trained parrot doing what following step-by-step instructions without having any real understanding of what you're doing. So the intuitive understanding of how these things work allows you to have a better bina, but you can't have any da'as without having bina grounded first. That's the part of the Mishnah. And the last part of the Mishnah says, Im ein kemach ein Torah, v'im ein Torah ein kemach. Without flour, there's no Torah. Without Torah, there's no flour. So now, just reflecting back to the first line of the Mishnah. The first line of the Mishnah had talked about Im ein Torah ein derech eretz. So some people want to understand derech eretz as like, call it getting a job. So I didn't say that there, I don't want to say what it isn't, because it isn't that, but now I want to contrast it. It isn't that. In other words, even the Bartanura who learns that derech eretz is referring specifically not to ethics in general, as I described it, the Bartanura learns that derech eretz is like business ethics, and you can't have, be an ethical business person without learning the halachas, etc. But it's not about to make a parnasa, it's about doing business ethically and properly and halachically, okay? Here we're talking about the parnasa itself. So kemach here is like a, you know, a symbol of having what to eat, or just in general having all the requisite details for of physical life. So, and kemach is the most basic ingredient, right? That's the flour that makes the bread. So the idea is here that if you don't have, you know, the basics you need to be healthy and have a full stomach and the like, so you can't have Torah because you can't focus. It's very difficult to focus when you're hungry, and there's no way in the long term your Torah studies can persist if you consistently don't have, you know, the nourishment that you need to make things, you know, to focus and be healthy. The other side of the story requires a bit of explaining, because unlike the rest of the mission, you shouldn't understand it to mean that somehow im ein Torah ein kemach, that if people don't learn Torah, there'll be no food in the world. That's not what it means. You open your eyes, you'll see there's plenty of societies that have no Torah and have plenty of food and so on. That's not what it means. Okay, so what does it mean? Okay, so the Mefarshim had different approaches. The Bartanura's approach, which is quite a harsh one actually, but I'll summarize it, is basically there's no point in you having food if you haven't got Torah. You're better off not having food for that matter, because the point is, the reason why we have a physical life and physical sustenance is to enable us to have a spiritual life and understand Hashem and develop a relationship with Him. If you're not doing that, there's no point in you having kemach in the first place. Okay, you might as well better off not have it at all. So that's how he explains this Mishnah. There are other approaches. All of them require like a bit of a non-literal reading of the Mishnah at all. I would like to say one important thing. There's a Rambam, which is learned out of this last part about in kemach in Torah. That's the source for the following Rambam. It's a Rambam, a famous Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Per Gimel Halacha Gimel, which reads as follows. I want to say it to you. It says, Haderech hatova la'adam hi, the proper way of living. Sheyasim alibo sheya kol gufo ve'erav shleimim. You should make it your business to ensure that your entire body and all of your limbs and organs, etc., are shalem, in good working order. That means both your muscles, your mind, your heart, your stomach. Got to take care of everything. Kadei shiyei gufo shalem v'chazak, so that you'll be in good shape and, you know, fit and strong. Bishvil shetehei nafsho yishara l'das es Hashem, so that your soul can be straight and able to come to know Hashem. Meaning, if you've got an ongoing stomach ache or you have a bad heart, that's going to distract you terribly, and you won't be able to focus on your avoda of your spiritual avoda of coming to know Hashem.
It's
it's just impossible, says the Rambam, for a person to really focus and come to understand wisdom and like learn deeply if he's hungry or if he's sick or if one of his, you know, limbs or organs are hurting him. Hamahalech b'derech zu, and therefore a person who goes in this path, meaning who takes care of his body, he eats properly, he sleeps properly, he gets exercise, make sure he has, you know, stretches and the like. So someone who walks on that path, kol yamav, throughout his life, harei hu oved es Hashem tamid. He's in constant service of Hashem, meaning even when he's focused on the eating part of his day or the exercise part of his day or the sleeping part of his day, that's also considered avodas Hashem. Afilu b'shasha nosa v'nosan. Even when he's doing business, the same idea, because the doing business is to enable him to have the money he needs to buy the food he needs and that kind of thing. Therefore, it's all part of his avodas Hashem. Shekein hu mitkaven b'chol pu'losav, because his intention with all of his actions is limtso al yadam es tzrachav, is to enable him to acquire what he needs, kadeshia gufo shalem, so his body should be in good working order, la'avod es Hashem, to serve Hashem. That's the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel, and the source that is, imen kemach ein Torah, l'chora.